Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott, or should I say JC Habit, who continues to make a habit of pissing off head coaches.
Hey, I may be results-based in my ragging sometimes, but this is a results-based business, Mr. Rick Gamble. Let's get this straight.
I think my favorite new buzzword, because every year in the CFL, there's a new buzzword and somebody uses it first. Sometimes it comes from other sports leagues or the NFL. And then lo and behold, it permeates its way across the country. And my favorite one is currently we're process based, not results based, or we're focused on the process, not the results. So I don't think that's completely inappropriate because, yeah, it's possible to play a really good game and lose. But I do think that there are times where coaches, after getting their butts kicked, will say things like, well, we're not results-based, we're process-based, simply so that people don't criticize them for the result, when in fact, the whole point is the result. Call me nuts, but that's my take.
If you go 0-18, do you think you're going to keep your job?
Well, I think at that point, your process sucks, but apparently the process is the only thing that matters. So if your process is good and you lose a bunch of games, then the results don't matter.
Before we move on to get into the show, fellas, we have to address Mr. John Baldman Hodge making his broadcast debut as a color analyst with 620 CKRM. He did the University of Regina Rams game at Princess Auto Stadium against the University of Manitoba with Brendan McGuire on the call as play-by-play. Hodge, how would you grade yourself and your process as a color man?
Well, as we know, the results don't matter. It's just the process. So I will focus on the process. I would give myself a B. I misspoke a couple of times. I know that the Regina Rams head coach, who I spoke to the day before the game, gave me a great interview. Super appreciate it. Mark McConkey, by the way, we talked a few weeks ago about Dexter Janke, head coach at the or at York University, being a super young head coach. McConkey also became a head coach at 31. And I believe Michael Falds at Laurier, though this is going back about 10 years ago, also was that age. So he's one of many head coaches, at least in the recent memory of U Sports, who have been very young. But at one point, I just misspoke. I said Mike McConkey, and it felt very stupid. I also called a drag route a dig route. I was probably the only person who was mad at that. But again, I just misspoke. But I didn't make any major gaffes. I've recorded the entire broadcast. I've listened back. I liked a lot of what I did. There's always things to clean up, though. And first and foremost, I'll say I had an absolute blast doing it. I remember, you know, for many years, I've had some people ask, like, oh, would you ever, you know, be interested in blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, ah, maybe, like, if the opportunity came up. But you don't really know how much you're going to like something until you do it. And after a three-hour game at Princess Auto Stadium, gorgeous weather, exciting game, Honestly, guys, I could have done a whole second game. I was having the time of my life. It was great. So if you need play-by-play in and around the province of Manitoba, or you got a big budget and you want to fly me out, I am happy to come do your game for maybe like a – I'd want like a Diet Dr. Pepper in return. Other than that, I don't think I need the money. It was just so much fun.
You can do play-by-play or color or both?
I prefer color, but I can do play-by-play. The only issue is I have infinitely more color experience than I do play-by-play experience because I've done one color game. I've done zero play-by-play. But I would be happy to try play-by-play. It's just more pressure, more prep for play-by-play, which I'm happy to give a try.
Hodges on the board, at least, making that debut. And you mentioned it being 3 hours long, Hodge. I'm guessing, at least from my experience, it doesn't feel like 3 hours. Like, it goes by in a flash. No. Did you feel that way?
It went by unbelievably quickly, which is funny because I've been going to all the Manitoba Bisons games for a number of years now, generally just watching from the press box and a lot of it to do my prep for the CFL draft, because over the course of the season, you can see almost all of Canada West come to play at the University of Manitoba. But those games can drag, right, at times, especially if they're not particularly close, or if you're there to watch, you know, let's say these five players and one of them gets hurt early and another one's not, you know, so they can drag it at times and feel a little longer than 3 hours. I swear that broadcast felt like maybe 90 minutes, and that's including the break that I had at halftime. It went by extremely quickly, and my dad was listening. He sent me a text after the game, and he said, "Wow, 3 hours straight on the radio. You must be exhausted." And literally, I was like, no, like, I'm ready to go. Now, I was unbelievably exhausted on Sunday, the day after the game. So clearly my body was feeling it. But in the moment, the adrenaline was flowing. I was ready to go. I could run a marathon. It would have been great.
I want to see that happen.
Marathon. Wow.
Well, a marathon. I mean, I've never run a marathon, but again, I'm a process-focused person, not a results-focused person. So even if I ran just the first mile, vomited, and stopped, then that's a fine result because I'm process-oriented, not results-oriented.
You probably walked a marathon alongside me on the streets of Halifax.
Yeah, probably in 40-degree weather.
Uphill both ways, too.
It was. It was so humid. It was right after their flooding. My heart goes up. I'm not trying to minimize the flooding in Halifax last year. That was awful. People had damage to their homes and all that stuff. But yeah, the humidity that came after that was brutal.
Let's get to the show, boys. We're discussing playoff races in the Canadian Football League's East and West divisions.
Brady Oliveira's MOP push.
A football getting stuck in the scoreboard at BC Place.
Canadian running backs performing at a high level in the NFL.
The Vancouver Canucks moving the start of one of their games to avoid conflict with the Grey Cup.
And Enoch Mwamba taking a crack at reality television. But first,
a member of the Saskatchewan Roughriders is once again surrounded by controversy as defensive back Deontay Williams was ejected during the late stages of Saturday's game at Mosaic Stadium for overturning rookie receiver Khalil Pimpleton and driving him headfirst into the turf. Red Blacks receiver Dominic Rhymes called the hit, quote, BS and Bush League on TSN 1200 postgame. And for the record, we are saying BS to be family friendly. Rhymes did not quite say exactly that. He said the actual word, stating that slamming someone on their head shows no regard for their life or for them as a player. Riders head coach Corey Mace said he wants his team to win with class and admitted that Saskatchewan's players made some decisions that they, quote, probably shouldn't have. JC, what's your take on this incident?
I thought this was an egregious tackle by Deontay Williams, and I get that it was a little bit of an awkward position with Khalil Pimpleton coming in with his head down. He gets turned upside down just naturally in the course of the tackle. But as soon as his feet lifted off the ground, the forward progress had stopped. You could see that the ref was about to blow the whistle. Williams had full control. He took a beat and then he drove him head first into the ground. To me, that exhibited clear intent on the behalf of the defender, to do that action. It wasn't just something that happened over the course of the play. And given the context of the situation, again, this happened with 6 seconds left in a game when they were down multiple, or they were up multiple scores. There was no chance that Ottawa could come back here. To me, it has to be punished firmly and quickly by the league. I would think that a one-game suspension is merited for this type of play. I think it is clear and egregious intent to cause harm to an opponent in a situation where it was completely uncalled for.
This one is difficult for me because I can sort of understand JC's point, but what really stands out to me is the awkward nature of the start of this tackle. And that if you are looking at it from Deontay Williams and his point of view, he's probably thinking, well, I want to make sure I get this guy to the ground. And defenders have done this with some force at times in the Canadian Football League. I do think that that last part of it is definitely dangerous and is worthy of likely a fine. And I think I could understand if there was a suspension for this hit. Though it does come back to something that Trevor Harris has said, him being a quarterback that has had a couple of major injuries the last couple of seasons, that defenders have to be like Neo in this day and age around quarterbacks, but especially in this instance as well, because Deontay Williams is going to have to change how he puts Pimpleton to the turf in a split second here. You know, I don't think that there was intent there to, you know, smash his head on the ground. I think Williams is probably trying to make sure he gets to the ground, but people are going to have other takes on that and view it as possibly a play that could have been avoided from Williams' perspective, considering the game was 2 scores at that point and there was really not a chance that Ottawa was going to come back, considering that there was, I think, less than 30 seconds on the clock. And this also started a mini brawl. By the way, I did like the comments from Corey Mace after the game that said that he talked to Ottawa Redblacks head coach Bob Dice and admitted that his team needs to learn a little bit more to win with class, especially after this situation happened. So I can understand, I guess is what I'm saying, all sides of this, and it probably could have been avoided.
To me, I think one of the things that Dominic Rimes said is really what to me defines this as a dirty, egregious hit. And that is Dominic Rimes pointing out that the stage of the game, right, really made this unnecessary. This was 6 seconds left, I believe it was, in a game that was a 2-score game. It was absolutely clear at this point of the game that it was over. The Red Blacks had lost. They played a terrible game, by the way. We'll get more into that a little later on in the show. But you know, if this is like it's a 2-point game and there's 2 minutes left and the Red Blacks are, you know, pushing the ball down the field and you're Deontay Williams and it's second down, you're looking to get the stop, I can kind of see what he did. I still think it's a penalty, but I think it's a little bit more understandable because Pimpleton is explosive. And if you ever let him get, you know, you let him go and he makes a big play, everyone's going to be all over you all week in Rider Nation. The game is over and you're slamming a guy on his head. There's no excuse for that. This is the second last play of the game. There's no need for it. The official, you just hold the guy up, which isn't hard. Khalil Pimpleton is like 175 pounds soaking wet. You hold him up, you wait for the whistle, and then you let him go. You do not have to slam his head into the turf. And I know some Rider fans are tired of hearing that their team is doing dirty stuff. And there's a simple solution to that. The Riders need to stop doing dirty stuff. I'm not saying that every hit that has been suspended or elicited a fine from the CFL over the last year or so has been intentionally dirty, but there's reasons that this team has been consistently fined. I believe this is at least the 4th one so far this year. Many teams in the league are at 0 fines right now. If you don't want people in the media or from other teams, as the Riders are saying here, to criticize the behavior of your team, sometimes it's up to your team to try to do a better job controlling their behavior. This is a results-based business, and if the Riders are using a process to try to not have these dirty hits happen, they need to improve upon that process.
Yeah, I think the narrative that the Raggers are somehow a dirty team gets overblown by other fan bases, but there have been dirty hits, notable ones, over the last 3 years especially, that have created a pattern that is a little bit difficult to ignore and I think has entrenched a number of fans into a defensive position. Because when this hit went viral and the discussion started on social media and we posted our article, there was a lot of backlash from Rider fans that, hey, this wasn't the worst hit of the game. Clearly, you're not talking about the dirtier hit, which was Money Hunter coming across and hitting Sean Bain Jr. low on a passing. I believe it was the second quarter, which injured the receiver's knee. And if you look at those videos, they could not be more different, right? The Sean Bain hit is incredibly unfortunate. Obviously, you don't wish injury on anybody in this league. And frankly, I wouldn't even be opposed to some sort of fine for it just to send a message of, hey, let's be a little bit more careful. But Money Hunter is clearly going for an interception on that play. He's got his hands out. He's looking for it. And then at the last moment realizes he's not going to get it and braces for impact because he doesn't want to be in that position either because he's about to get a knee to the head. And unfortunately, the low contact happens and Bain's leg bends at an awkward angle. That is wildly different from the play at the end, where an unnecessary hit happens with a moment of pause, what appears to be forethought, and then intent to finish. Whether it was intent to injure is another discussion, but there was certainly intent to finish on that play, and the finishing part was not necessary. I think that criticism is valid, and it should unite everybody, regardless of your team affiliation, that that's not a play that we want in this game.
If we're going to talk about the Riders and this potentially becoming a trend or actually being a trend of these hits potentially being dirty, I think it's unfair to put all of that on Corey Mace. Let's look at just his time as a head coach. This is really the first one that you might be able to put in that category. Deonte Williams, I'm talking about. I know Winnipeg Blue Bombers fans aren't going to want to hear that because I believe after Miles Brown explained his intent and his actions on the high hit that he ended up delivering to Zach Collaros in the Labor Day Classic, that he was trying to hold himself up. And the one that put Chris Trevler out for the year was a short yardage play. I do believe there is some substance there to what Riders defensive line coach Philip Daniels was talking about with Brown being held or pulled to the ground. And I think that was just unfortunate. The CFL and Randy Ambrosi have sent out a memo in recent weeks stating that they're going to come down harder on dangerous hits around the quarterback. But I do think this Deonte Williams tackle specifically is the first one since Mace has become the head coach in Saskatchewan under his staff and regime that would even have a chance to be labeled as dirty. Do you guys agree or disagree?
I think that Miles Brown could have done a better job of controlling himself, particularly on the hit in the Labor Day Classic against Zach Collaros. That being said, I would not call either of his hits, you know, obvious intents to injure. I think that especially the second one, I think they're penalties because penalties don't stem from intention, right? Penalties, yeah. As JC laid out with the Money Hunter hit, penalties come from what the actual result is, not the process, if you will. So I don't think that those were necessarily flagrantly dirty hits. I do think that they were punishable offenses in the form of penalty and or fine. But Doug, as part of this article, not to derail this, but really quickly, I thought you did a great job with this article outlining all of the fines that have come for hits on quarterbacks this year. Saskatchewan is on this list three different times. Montreal is on this list four times. And I don't think that Rider fans should point at say, look, that means that Montreal is really dirty and we're fine, because Calgary is not on this list. BC is not on this list. Toronto is not on this list. So there are teams that are finding ways to, especially in the case of like the Toronto Argonauts, who have a very nice defensive front. There's other teams finding ways to play physical and pressure the quarterback. but not result in these hits that are either borderline or outright dirty and eliciting either fines or penalties. So if we're going to play the comparison game between teams, yes, the Riders are among the most penalized team, at least for these types. Penalties on the year, they're about midway through the league in terms of raw penalty numbers and yardage. But for fines, for hits on quarterbacks, the Riders are closer to the top than they are to the bottom.
Well, it's really easy to have zero fines for hits on quarterbacks when you can't get to the quarterback, which is the case for the Calgary Stampeders. So perhaps they're being saved from themselves on this particular issue. But I agree with everything Hodge said. I thought the second Miles Brown hit was his most egregious. It deserved the fine in terms of the hit to head to the head of Zach Collaros. But there are really three hits here that make the trend for me in terms of things I thought were worthy of suspension. You've got the Garrett Marino incident, which of course sparks this whole thing off.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's a different regime, JC. Narrative.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not arguing against that. I think you are completely accurate on that. And Deontay Williams was not on the team for the Garrett Marino incident. There is no link between them. Those two players have never crossed paths. But when you talk about the trend, it's the Marino incident, it's the Pete Robertson headbutt last year, and then it's this Deontay Williams hit. Those are the three suspendable offenses. Everything else is just the natural consequences of what happened when you're playing football. And unfortunately, sometimes there are plays where a player goes a little too far, or there's a circumstance that lends itself to an illegal play, and that happens. But these plays had intent. They went too far, and I think it's right for fans to call them out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Montreal Alouettes have clinched first place in the East Division, which means it's time to turn our attention to the number two spot. The Ottawa Redblacks failed to punch their ticket to the postseason for a second straight week, losing in Saskatchewan as Jeremiah Mazzoli threw three picks, while the Toronto Argonauts held off the Owls late to get a 37-31 win at home. These two teams are only 1 point apart in the standings, and assuming both make the playoffs, which one do you see earning a home playoff game?
This is getting closer than the Ottawa Redblacks would like it. They've had multiple chances to lock this up, but it hasn't happened yet, which has given the Argonauts a chance. I do think, though, as we go down the stretch of the season, that especially, and this is the key for me, if Drew Brown can get back on the field for the stretch run, that the Redblacks will get that home playoff game. If he's not on the field, then that gives me some pause and makes me think that there's a possibility the Argos could leapfrog them and host that game at BMO Field.
I am fully on the Toronto Argonauts at this point. The Ottawa Redblacks were super banged up this past week at Mosaic Stadium. I was comfortable taking the Riders to win and cover by a lot more than I think it was the 3 points they were favored by. And that ended up being, you know, held true. They've not got Bryce Carter in the lineup at defensive end. Alonzo Adai out at safety. I think that's part of the reason that led to the Money Hunter hit, by the way, is Money Hunter has not played safety in a very long time. The angles are all different coming from back there. They got Khalil Pimpleton back, which is great. But, I mean, Jeremiah Masoli had a really rough performance, obviously. To me, I think that these Ottawa Redblacks are going to finish third. Part of my reasoning for that is the schedule. They are hosting the Montreal Alouettes when they come back from bye. And it is true the Alouettes won't have a lot to play for. That being said, the Alouettes also haven't played very well over the last month. They're playing their worst football of the season right now. I think coming off bye, Jason Moss is going to read them the riot act and try to get them back into their winning ways to try to kind of reestablish that momentum heading into the postseason. And these two teams, by the way, play each other on October 19th. And if you have plans on October 19th, I'm telling you right now, it's almost 3 weeks away, cancel them, call in sick, do whatever you have to do. This is going to be a very pivotal game. I'm not going to say it's going to be a great game because we haven't seen it yet, but this is a tremendously important game in the CFL this year. It could even decide this semifinal game where it is played at TD Place or BMO Field. There's always still a chance, technically, I think, that it could be at Tim Hortons Field, but we're not going to talk about that. My money's on the Argonauts. They do have a tougher schedule, I think, at least in the interim. They're going to Winnipeg coming off their bye week. The Bombers might still have a lot to play for at that point. And I think that a lot of Bomber fans are excited to show Chad Kelly exactly what they think of him. That being said, I just think the Argos are the better team. They're getting healthier at the right time. They're finding their groove. And I don't know. The point differential is the other thing that really scares me with the Ottawa Redblacks. Right now, the Toronto Argonauts have they're 1 point back of Ottawa, but the Argonauts have a positive point differential of 26 points. Ottawa minus 37 on the year. They're two games above 500, but they have won close and lost big, and it's hard to bet on a team like that.
Yeah, this team is just too banged up for me to bet on the Ottawa Redblacks right now. And that could change coming off the bye week, right? The six-game injured list is not the rule of the law. Some guys can come off early. Some guys can come off on time. We could see a bunch of people get healthy over this little break, and all of a sudden this is a different-looking team. But right now they're banged up all over. Drew Brown did not look good before he left with that ankle injury in the last couple of games. And Jeremiah Mazzoli looked worse this week in relief. I'm not seeing any signs of a turnaround in Ottawa right now. Their offense, which was so potent at times this year, is really, really floundering. And I think the Toronto Argonauts just have an absolute stable of weapons. They found something in receiver Mekhi Polk. Chad Kelly brings an element to that passing attack that few teams have in terms of his ability to flip the field with the deep ball. But he's not playing risky football right now. He's taking what's given, and that's incredibly impressive. And that running game, a three-headed monster right now with Kadeem Carey and Deontay McMahon and Daniel Agababoye, where they're just churning out yards, 234. This week against the Montreal Alouettes. That's a massively impressive number in a CFL football game from a team. And I think they can keep it going. I think Toronto gets the edge here, and they're going to host the East Semi.
The other injury that I should mention is, of course, Adarius Pickett, who, for my money, should have been the most outstanding defensive player in the CFL last season. This team was 8-3-1 with Adarius Pickett in the lineup at strong side linebacker. He technically dressed for their Week 15 loss, but he got hurt on the first play of the game, so we'll count it as not there. Without him, this team is 0-3, and they've lost at Hamilton versus Montreal and at Saskatchewan by double digits each week. He was truly the spark plug on that side of the defense. Bennett Williams, who's replaced him, is a fine player. He doesn't hold a candle, at least not right now, to Adarius Pickett. So defensively, they really seem to have lost their spark plug. He was also great on cover teams for specials. And the offense is not picking up the slack right now. So that's another reason I'm happy to roll with the Toronto Argonauts as second place, despite the fact that their schedule might be a little bit tougher.
Out west, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers laid absolute waste to the Edmonton Elks, 55-27, sweeping a home-and-home set, leaving Saskatchewan and BC as by far the most likely teams to fight for second in the West. Hodge, who do you see taking that spot and hosting the Western semifinal, Riders or Lions?
I'm going to pick the Riders, and the reason is simple.
But I thought you hate the Riders, Hodge. Everybody in Rider Nation thinks you're a homer and that you hate the green and white, but Hodge is here to tell you different today.
Well, JC had people in his mentions this week telling him that he's a Bomber homer. So either Rider fans think they're the same person Or they just think that anybody without green tinted glasses is a bomber homer, which is fine. Whatever. The Riders are home twice late in the year. I think home field advantage means a lot more in Regina than it does in Vancouver. Both these teams have a home game against Calgary left, which is kind of interesting that they've got a similar schedule remaining. But these two teams play each other on October 12th. And I'm going to say the same thing I did in our last segment. If you have plans on October 12th, cancel them, move them, change them, call in sick, do whatever you got to do.
And tune into the pregame show on 620 CKRM and the postgame show live on their YouTube channel, youtube.com/@sportscage.com. Thanks, Hutch.
Because this is going to be an incredible game. And then read JC's postgame column from the Lions perspective up at 3downnation.com. Because this could decide second place in the West Division. And yes, technically, Calgary is still in the mix. Edmonton's still in the mix. Realistically, though, I think it comes down to these two teams. Interestingly, just like the Ottawa-Toronto race, season series means nothing because Toronto has a tie, so they've got an odd number of, or pardon me, Ottawa has a tie, so they've got an odd number of points. Toronto's still even. And in this race, it's the same thing. BC is an even number of points. Saskatchewan is a tie, so they have an odd number. Season series doesn't mean anything. I think it's going to come down to that game between them head to head. And again, I think that Rider Nation could be the difference, right? They'll hopefully fill that bowl. I know the stadium was not full this past weekend, which is kind of too bad, against Ottawa. But I'd imagine with BC, Nathan Rourke coming to town, they'll be able to draw more fans. And Trevor Harris, I think, has quietly played exceptional football over the past 5-6 weeks. I know that team has only won one or two of their last, I think it's 6 games since he's been back. But he's consistently played well, right? He's distributing the ball well, taking pressure off a young offensive line. Reichwell Armstead, yeah, had a down week after his 200-yard performance, but I think he's going to bounce back. Well, yes, and they've still got Frankie Hickson, and they've got A.J. Ouellette, who theoretically is getting some rest.
You didn't even mention Thomas
Bertrand,
you
done.
Thomas the Train toting that rock, making Damon Webb look like he's grasping a ghost, my man.
And Damon Webb played at Ohio State, so he has come up to play against a lot of top-tier running backs. Who knew it was Thomas Bertrand Hudon, Delaware State legend, coming up? Who would
Delaware State fullback.
Yeah, fullback, not even
full-time. He rushed for over 1,000 yards, though, there. Got the ball a decent amount.
I think it took him 5 years, but yes, he did rush for over 1,000 yards.
I think he had 600 in his first year, and then the next 4 years he had 400.
Thomas the Train.
Also, college teammate and still good friend, from what I understand, of Winnipeg Blue Bombers fullback Michael Krasik. They played together in the same backfield as Canadians at Delaware State for 4 years for the Hornets, which is pretty cool. Anyway, the point I'm illustrating is they're able to run the ball because they've got all these different running backs. The offensive line, again, is young, but they're finding ways. And defensively, I love their physicality. They just have to rein it in and not cross the line that Deontay Williams did, as we discussed off the top. But I do like the Riders for this fight. And what a West final that would be, Saskatchewan at Winnipeg.
Yeah, the Riders have the clear edge here. They've already got the leg up, and I think they can win the head-to-head, and they can win more games down the stretch than the BC Lions. Frankly, I don't think it's a guarantee that these BC Lions even make the playoffs, because the Hamilton Tiger
Cats
are coming down the stretch looking for that crossover berth. I mean, you guys both watch this BC Lions team. It's listless. There's nothing there. The defense is not good enough, right? They don't have enough pieces. And offensively, it looks painful. It looks like labor for them to try and execute anything right now. We are 6 games in to Nathan Rourke returning to this football team. And I love Nathan Rourke. I have nothing but confidence in his future and his ability to be an elite quarterback in the CFL. I still think the BC Lions made the right decision bringing him in. But this doesn't feel like his football team still. It doesn't feel like he's got any chemistry with anybody out there. And it's getting worse week after week as the pressure builds, the controversies builds, and this thing starts to wear at this football team. They don't have answers. Rick Campbell doesn't have answers. He's getting frustrated and getting snippy in press conferences. I've never seen that from him before. And it just feels like a locker room that does not have any clue how they're going to right the ship right now. I have no faith in their ability to turn this around. And I think the Saskatchewan Roughriders, yeah, they went through their own slump. But all throughout that, you saw the pieces. You're like, well, they've got the talent here. They just need this guy back from injury, this thing to happen, and all of a sudden they'll start winning again. I don't see those answers for the BC Lions right now. I think this is a sinking ship.
Let's address the pressure building in BC for a second, because, JC, you sort of alluded to it, but Rick Campbell was not happy with a direct question that you asked, and it's very rare for him to show some frustration or anger, I guess we could call it in this case, outwardly. But I do believe that speaks to the pressure with this team hosting the Grey Cup, the first one under Amar Doman, who has apparently put a lot of money into it, that he wants that team to be in the Grey Cup, but you got to win your way there. So full credit to JC for asking a totally understandable question about not going for it on third down a couple of times, but specifically late in the football game, and Rick Campbell getting upset at you. You know, I can understand him being upset. It's great for the media. We want honest, emotional responses from the people that we ask these questions to. So, you know, I appreciate that he wasn't going into coach speak like he usually does, but I don't think it's fair to kind of direct everything at you. That said, you're a big boy, you can handle it. So, Lions pressure aside, I always felt like this Riders team was right there. If you look at that 7-game winless streak, if I have it right in my head, one of them was a tie, so that's 6 games. 5 of those losses were by 5 points or less, literally by 1 point, 2 points, 3 points, 4 points, and 5 points. They kind of hit for the cycle there, so to speak, in terms of those losses, that you could see the fight was still there. It's very clear Corey Mace has endeared himself to the locker room. He finished the post-game speech after beating the Ottawa Redblacks. I was thinking about a different team for some reason, by going and jumping in the cold tub because I guess he accidentally called the offensive lineman for the Saskatchewan Roughriders fat, and then he joked around with us post-game on 620 CKRM saying, hey, I'm a big guy, so, you know, I'm just kind of calling the pot calling the kettle black here. But I do think that this team went through some adversity and built up a resolve that is going to help them down the stretch. And you look at their schedule. They play Calgary the final week of the season at home. That's going to be a win. They get Edmonton this week. They can, by my calculations, clinch a playoff spot by beating Edmonton and the Tiger Cats losing. And then, as Hodge alluded to, that big game with BC for second place. So I think this Riders team is going in the right direction. Trevor Harris's play, you're right, Hodge, has been underrated. You know, that said, they're going to have to prove that at the end of football games, they can get it done in close games. They did it early in the season when May started so hot with this team, but during that lull, they weren't able to do it. And credit to them for, you know, somewhat blowing out the Calgary Stampeders. I know that score line was a little closer than it would look in terms of a blowout, but I felt like the Riders dominated that football game against Ottawa, especially defensively, and Roland Milligan Jr. yet again is making his case for not just MODP, but MOP.
I want to touch on it, and by the way, I'm essentially the same height and weight as Corey Mace, so I can state that, yes, we should not be calling offensive linemen fat and pointing the finger at anybody. But let's get into the standings, because JC said that he thinks that the Hamilton Tiger Cats could still make the playoffs over BC. Well, right now, Hamilton is in control of their own fate against Edmonton and Calgary, because they are 3 points ahead of Calgary, though the Stampeders have a game in hand. They are 2 points ahead of Edmonton, having played an even number of games. That being said, for Hamilton to cross over to the West, which I'm still, by the way, going to say will not happen, they need to finish with more points than the BC Lions do. They're currently 2 points down, both teams 3 games to go. So in other words, Hamilton has to finish 2 wins better than BC. BC is hosting Calgary this week. Do we feel like they can beat the Stamps?
Probably.
They've already lost to them once this year.
They lost them at McMahon by a point, but they did beat Calgary in Vancouver earlier this year. So if BC wins that game, and let's say for a moment they do, that means if they lose at Saskatchewan in week 19, the game we were talking about a moment ago, and versus Montreal in week 20, a game in which the Alouettes will have nothing to play for, then yes, the Ticats could win a playoff spot if they rattle off three more victories, which would mean a 7-game winning streak to end the year for them. Those games, by the way, hosting Winnipeg, hosting Calgary, at Ottawa. Hosting Calgary feels very winnable. At Ottawa, never know. As we've talked about, Red Blacks awfully banged up right now. Versus Winnipeg this week, that's a tall order, considering Zach Collaros just went full beast mode, throwing 6 touchdown passes for the first time in his career. Should be noted, as I noted in my column, after the Bombers win at home versus Edmonton, Winnipeg has lost their last 2 regular season games in Hamilton. In 2022, they gave up 5 touchdown passes to Dane Evans. In 2023, they allowed a missed field goal return touchdown, which cost them dearly. So if the Ticats win this week, and if the Lions lose, I will officially change my tune and start talking about a West crossover for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Until then, I'm still sticking with my story, which is that the Hamilton Tiger Cats, for all they've been great, and by the way, they were 3rd on my ballot this week for power rankings. I'm not hating on the Tabbies now. I'm hating on the Tabbies from 3 months ago when they'd fallen and could not get up. So that is why I'm saying they're not going to make the playoffs still. Brady Oliveira won 3 Down Nation's Play of the Week this week for his remarkable catch and run touchdown against Edmonton. He's over 1,500 yards from scrimmage with 3 touchdowns this season. And boys, I want to know, does that make Oliveira the front runner for MOP? Or does that title still belong to Levi Mitchell after he led the Ticats to a sensational comeback in Vancouver?
I love Brady Oliveira's game. I thought he should have won MOP last year. I'm on record as saying that. Even though I'm the running back hater of this group, I thought he should have won the MOP. And in fact, I voted for him. But he's not even in my top 3 for MOP right now. I that could change down the stretch. But I've got both Roland Milligan and Tyrell Ford ahead of him. I think we should recognize those 2 tremendous defensive backs for their extremely high level of play. And then Bo Levi Mitchell has come into my front runner spot, especially after that tremendous game against the BC Lions. And everyone will say, well, I mean, it wasn't the best game by a quarterback this week. Zach Collaros threw 6 touchdowns. He had 463 yards or something ridiculous like that in that football game. Bo had 315. The stat line looks sort of okay. But you've got to have the context there, because Bo was down and out. The Hamilton Tiger Cats looked terrible in that first half. Bo throws an early interception, and then from that point on, he was 29 of 30 the rest of the game. And that one incompletion, gentlemen, a drop by the fullback that hit him right in the hands. He was perfect for the entire remainder of the game as he took that team on a comeback. It was as good as I've seen a quarterback play in person ever. And I think he has been that guy down the stretch here for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. He had the numbers at the start of the season, wasn't getting the wins. Now he's got the numbers and he's getting the wins. And even if this team does not make the playoffs, as is very possible, as Hodge just laid out, I still think Bo Levi Mitchell is the most outstanding player in the CFL right now, which I certainly didn't think I was ever going to be saying again after 2018.
JC doing an about face on this whole running back thing is a whole other conversation. So let's just stick with the MLP race this year, okay? Because I know people are sick of us talking about running backs having no value. We can do that in the offseason. I'm more and more, fellas, coming around on Tyrell Ford and Roland Milligan Jr. specifically potentially being in this race. But the trouble is, Hodge, you've alluded to this, Tyrell Ford's not going to get out of his own team. Brady Oliveira is going to be the Winnipeg Blue Bombers nominee for MLP. And I think there's a great chance that he comes out of the West Division. That said,
That's a travesty. Tyrell Ford's not going to get anything. How good has he been this year? He's been the best defensive player in the CFL this year right now.
Well, he's not going to get anything. He's going to get the Bombers nomination for most outstanding defensive player.
Probably, yeah.
You would think. I mean, that's left up to the voters.
He's been better than Oliveira. He should get all three nominations in my mind.
Okay, I'm not saying that he isn't. So that's your opinion. But I think if you look at Roland Milligan Jr. on the stat sheet, his impact on this team overall, from just the way that Corey Mace talks about him, and being around Corey Mace now for the majority of the season, Mace doesn't really like to single out people. But when you hear him talk about who he refers to as Ro, short for Roland, it seems that he just has this reverence for this player and the impact that he makes on this team. Yes, he's leading the league with 7 interceptions, more than your boy Tyrell Ford there, JC. He has piled up a bunch of tackles as well this year. He's got 62 on defense, 18 on special teams, leads the league in special teams tackles. It makes me wonder that if you took Roland Milligan off that Saskatchewan defense this year, would they be leading the league in turnovers? Would they be leading the league in turnover ratio? And how impactful that has been for this team cannot be understated. I do think that there is a definite argument for Roland Milligan Jr. being an MLP. Rider Nation has these digital billboards, I guess we'll call it, going online, Milligan for MLP, which I think is more and more becoming valid. But I do think if the Hamilton Tiger Cats are able to make the playoffs, that it will be Bo Levi Mitchell as the MLP. Because if they make it, they'll have continued this hot stretch. He'll throw for over 5,000 yards, probably get into over 30 touchdown passes, and the remarkable turnaround will largely be placed on his shoulders, rightfully or wrongfully. I think he's had a big, what am I trying to say here? Big reason in terms of turning around this Ticat season, but there's been some other factors there as well. But if they get in there, I think it'll probably be Bo Levi Mitchell in a runaway. If the Ticats don't get in, then I think it opens it up to the conversations around Roland Milligan Jr., Brady Oliveira, or Tyrell Ford. I just don't think Ford's going to get the MLP nomination from the Bombers.
I agree with that, Dunk. And that is, at the end of the day, just another reason why the awards needs to be redone. I don't see any reason for it to be divisional. I think the entire reason that it was divisional to start with, if you go back way back in the day, was given how few games were televised, it was unreasonable for voters to have a really comprehensive understanding of, well, who really is in the opposite division? Do we really know those players? Let's just focus on the East, or let's just focus on the West. Nowadays, there's no excuse in a 9-team league when every single game is televised in, you know, 1080p, 4K, whatever. It's very easy, right, to follow everything. That's certainly what we do here at Three Down Nation. It should just be a pool of three and nationally vote for one of those three. That's my opinion anyway. Tyrell Ford should be a finalist for Most Outstanding Canadian. One could argue he should be one of the three finalists for Most Outstanding Player, and I do think he should be one of the finalists for Most Outstanding Defensive Player. That's not going to happen because Brady Oliveira is going to get Winnipeg's nod for MLP, I believe. I also think Brady Oliveira is going to get Winnipeg's nod for Most Outstanding Canadian. To me, I wrote a column this past week, which is actually inspired by last week's episode. So if you haven't gone and read that column, please do. It's called Could Bo Levi Mitchell Win CFL MLP, Even If Hamilton Tiger Cats Miss Playoffs? And to answer the question we posed last week, yes, two players have won MLP despite missing the playoffs. It hasn't happened in almost 50 years. The first was Willie Burden of the Calgary Stampeders, running back in 1975. He had almost 1,900 yards on the ground, 10 touchdowns, 230 yards through the air, another 5 touchdowns through the air. Unbelievable year for him. He set a single season rushing record in the CFL that year, and he also set a new yards from scrimmage record that year. The Stampeders, here's the interesting caveat, they finished 6-10, but they would have made the playoffs if the rules were the same then as they are now. There was no crossover at the time. Calgary was better as the fourth place team than the third place team in the East, so they would have been a playoff team. under today's rules. The other one was Jimmy Edwards in 1977, member of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. He also had an incredible year, almost 1,600 rushing yards, six touchdowns, also 223 yards through the air, some return yardage as well. He actually set a league record with 2,600 combined yards. That's offensive yards and special teams yards put together. Unfortunately, his team was terrible. He played for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. They finished last in the East Division at 5-11. They actually had a far worse point differential, however, than the worst team in the league, which was Calgary that year at 4-12. So Edwards is the one player who's won MOP, who, regardless of the rules, whether they're old or new, whatever, would still have missed the playoffs. I also put in my column some examples of MLPs who were on pretty mediocre teams. I also wrote about the two NFL MVPs, John Unitas and O.J. Simpson, who missed the playoffs, though that is kind of a joke. John Unitas missed the playoffs with the Baltimore Colts in 1967, despite having a record of 11-1-2. That was simply because at the time, only the top team from each division made the playoffs. So there were two teams screaming at the top of what was then called the Western Conference Coastal Division. So the point is, it has happened before that a non-playoff player has won MOP. Could it happen this year? Yes. I think right now, as much as there is a campaign for Roland Milligan, as much as there is a campaign for Tyrell Ford, I think at the end of the day, the finalists right now are going to be Brady and Bo. And it was funny because Brady's touchdown run, I thought, was kind of a signature moment in that win against Edmonton. You kind of go, wow, this could be the run that everybody sees and makes voters go, heck, I don't care that he's only got three touchdowns right now, I'm voting for Brady. Then I get home from the game. I turn on the Ticats game, which, as I've been kind of following the stats, looked like a complete and utter waste of time. But I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to be able to sleep anyway. It's like 12:30 local time. I get home, turn on the game, and lo and behold, Bo Levi Mitchell has a signature type performance. You mentioned it, JC, 29 of 30. By the way, James Tuck is a wonderful CFL player. I have no idea why the Ticats routinely throw him the football, despite the fact that he has yet to prove through, I think, 12 years of this league that he can catch the ball. He was a defensive lineman at York University, and he looks every bit of his defensive line self when he tries to catch the ball. Story for another day. But the point is, I love the race that's forming up between these two, though would be interesting to see if Roland Milligan got the nod out of the West.
Hey, and if you want to talk about signature MOP moments, how about Bo Levi Mitchell catching the 2-point convert?
That was sick. Philly special, Steeltown special.
That was not on my bingo card for this CFL season. Bo Levi Mitchell is doing it all right now for the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Let me just get some stats quick. Right, real quick, fellas, because I was reading the week through 16 stats, but Roland Milligan, 65 defensive tackles through 14 games, 19 special teams tackles. Am I wrong again? Those are 14 games or 15 games they played?
They've played 15.
He's played 14 because he missed the game in Calgary. Yeah. Right, okay. That's correct. Just want to make sure I got it right. 65 defensive tackles, 19 special teams tackles, 7 interceptions, fellas, and through week 16, at least, he was tied for the league with 10 pass knockdowns. Like, the more I get into this, I can understand him legitimately being in this race, and he most likely will be the Saskatchewan Roughriders nominee for MODP and MOP. But when you're talking about Bo and Brady, I think that's going to be too much to overcome. And Hodge, you hit that perfectly in terms of a lot of times in United States college football, NCAA, whatever you want to call it, voters will talk about having a Heisman moment or a Heisman performance. That Brady Oliveira catch and run touchdown was unbelievable. It's still garnering retweets and likes on our Twitter handle. And I think that that could stand out. But if Bo Levi Mitchell gets his team into the playoffs, that's going to be hard for voters to ignore.
Agreed. And I do think, as we saw last year and we've arguably seen in years prior, there is always a bit of a bias towards quarterbacks with this award. And in fairness, quarterback is probably the hardest position to play in all professional sports. It certainly is the hardest position to play in pro football. One quick stat, since you're throwing out stats, Dunk. Right now, Bo Levi Mitchell has 15 carries for 122 yards on the season. I don't think we're going to be calling him a dual threat quarterback anytime soon, but that is the most rushing yards he's had in a season since 2014. That's 10 years ago when he was still a 23-year-old first-time starter. His second most came the year prior in 2013 when he had 151 rushing yards. So if he gets another 30 this year, which he very well could, he's presumably going to make three more starts, then yeah, he would be the, he could potentially at least set a new career high or close to in rushing at the age of 33. I know that Mitchell has routinely credited Marcellus Bowman, former CFL linebacker, who is now the team's strength and conditioning coach, for his kind of turnaround there. So kudos to Mitchell for the work he's put in, and kudos to Boomacat, as they used to call him back in Winnipeg, for helping Bo Levi Mitchell find this renaissance of athleticism.
Standings are starting to take shape in U Sports following another exciting week across the country. Boys, which game stood out the most to you?
You never really know how it's going to shake out in the Canada West. There were a couple of thrillers that came down to the final seconds. The one I want to highlight for multiple reasons is the University of British Columbia Thunderbirds beating the Calgary Dinos 32-30. Well, JC, come on. I talked about Isaiah Knight. And by the way, JC, you're going to have to own up to this, okay? Because you're like, the San Francisco 49ers asking for film doesn't mean anything. They do it all the time, okay? The Los Angeles, formerly San Diego Superchargers, came out to practice to check out Isaiah Knight, JC, okay? And the Philadelphia Eagles, who also might know a thing or two about running backs, have called to do background and asked for film on Isaiah Knight. So the interest is building. He is matching, if not exceeding, that interest. Knight rushed 24 times to reset his career high, which, oh, by the way, he did 1 week before during the T-Birds homecoming win, 235 yards and a touchdown in this one. This guy has a special blend of size and speed. Don't listen to JC Abbott, because the NFL interest is going to continue to come for this kid, and rightfully so. The Thunderbirds are hot right now, and, you know, I don't cheer for any teams out there. So I'm just going to lay this out from a factual standpoint. If the UBC Thunderbirds were to go on and win the Hardy Cup, go back-to-back, we could have a great game on Saturday of Grey Cup weekend at Thunderbird Stadium, because that's the Canada great. West champions host the Quebec Conference champions in this year's run-up to the Vanier Cup. So I'm not cheering for anything, but you talk about wanting to have the Vanier Cup on the same weekend as a Grey Cup. It obviously ain't going to happen this year or next year. Hopefully, sometime in the future, it can happen. But how sick would that be? UBC against Laval or Montreal at Thunderbird Stadium this Saturday, right next to Grey Cup? That would be electric.
That would be absolutely electric.
You're saying only Laval or Montreal can make it out with the RSEQ? I'm shocked. I thought Concordia could slip right in. No? No? Okay.
No.
I don't think another team has played for an RSEQ championship since, I think it was 2004. So, yes, it will be one of those two.
Might be more recent than that. Sherbrooke was in it, I think, a little more recently.
Maybe one. Maybe they've been in 19 Chouare, in the last 20. I looked up the stat. Maybe it's 19 the last 20. But regardless, yes, it'll be one of those two teams coming to CanWest this season. And I'll say this, Dunk. I know that for the Cinderella story of Brian Daubigny's last year, it would be great for Manitoba to host that game. But I won't be in the province of Manitoba. I'm going to be in Vancouver for Grey Cup. So, yeah, part of me is kind of hoping, as much as I'm ashamed to admit it, that that game is in BC. Because I would love to attend that game live and say that I've been to a Thunderbirds game, especially a playoff game where hopefully you'd have a great crowd and the weather should be nice.
Dude, that stadium, November, the view.
Oh. I've heard great things about that facility. So that would be a heck of a time. I'm also sticking in CanWest for my game. However, I am going north to Saskatoon, where the Saskatchewan Huskies came back from a 30-14 fourth quarter deficit against the Alberta Golden Bears to win. And this really, I think, saved the Huskies' season. Had they lost, they would have fallen to 1-4 at the basement of the conference alongside the Calgary Dinos. Alberta would have improved to 3-2. Instead, they're both at 2-3. And it's clear that the Huskies have taken a step back since recently appearing in back-to-back Vanier Cups. That being said, I admire them for still being a scrappy team. The Golden Bears are especially talented running the football, and I think it's very impressive that Saskatchewan was able to come back, because coming back against teams who can run the ball down your throat is a tough thing to do. Strangely, looking at the play-by-play, Alberta didn't run the ball a whole heck of a lot with the big lead. I kind of questioned the play calling there, but kudos to the Huskies. 16-point comeback is nothing to sneer at, and again, arguably, they did it. They did it in front of their home crowd, and it arguably saved their season.
I think you guys nailed the two big games of the week. I'm a bit of a Canada West homer, but those were the ones I had my eye on. Another stat I had my eye on, and I need you to tell me if this is wrong, Hodge. It's in your article. Windsor Lancers beat the Toronto Varsity Blues 52-5. Their That's defensive correct. Stat line, 10 tackles for loss, 7 sacks, 3 takeaways, only allow 49 offensive yards, and record 6 safeties? Yes, is that right? 6 safeties?
According to the official box score from U Sports, there were 7 safeties in this game, 6 of which were allowed by the Varsity Blues. So yes, the Windsor Lancers defense scored 12 points on safeties.
Derek Taylor is absolutely just puking all over himself because he hates it when teams give up safeties. But fellas, before we get out of this segment, I need to highlight the best homecoming game in all of Canadian university football.
Not even close.
It's always sold out. And I'll give you a little tip here that U of G doesn't want me to talk about. They say it's 8,500 fans, but usually it's over 10,000 fans that fill the stands at Alumni Stadium and that nice bowl of a hill that they have built up there. The best homecoming atmosphere, bar none. The Griffins fans always show up. To full credit to them for showing out, for the Griffins to getting it done, 42-25.
I'm going to ask you a yes or no question, and I would like you to answer with just a yes or no. No caveats, no ifs, ands, or buts, candy or nuts, Justin. Yes or no, do you genuinely think the atmosphere at Guelph's homecoming is better than when the Caravans visit the Laval Rougeor?
Oh, he's thinking about it. What?
No, what? But I said homecoming.
Laval doesn't need homecoming to fill their stadium. Their attendance numbers have been insane this year. But I will say this. Yes, it looked like a great atmosphere there. I don't think it's as good as the Panda game, which is coming up next week between the
Homecoming
and Ravens.
Homecoming.
Okay.
Well, the Thunderbirds got 9,000 at their homecoming.
Let me ask you this, Doug.
It's a nice crowd, but it ain't U of G.
I've been to a number of Thunderbirds homecoming games. They can get well over 10,000. How many of those U of G fans stay for the entire game? Because the problem with UBC homecoming is everyone leaves at halftime to go get drunk. So
I would say over the years,
be real,
that
how many of those
Griffins there,
faithful are stay?
Over the years that I played there and the games that I've been at for homecoming games in subsequent years, that crowd stays pretty hearty. Unless the game ends up being an absolute blowout, because there were some years I think we played York and Toronto.
So they're fair weather fans, though.
They might leave, but in the games that were close and that had great weather, the fans stayed for the majority, if not all of the game.
If you are not a U Sports fan and you don't know what we're talking about with Laval, I was at the Montreal Caravans Laval game in Quebec City last year. It was absolutely incredible. And Laval, if you go onto their Twitter account, at Rougeor, you can see some of the video that they've done from games this year. The atmosphere there is absolutely electric. They're consistently drawing like 19,000 people to Stade Telus, which is absolutely remarkable, a tremendous atmosphere. And if you ever get the chance to go to a game, do it. And if you're going to make a once in a lifetime trip to Quebec City, you may as well overlap it with a Laval Rougeor game, because it is a fantastic event. And everybody, I think, who's in Canadian football should make the trip to take that in. And I got to say, man, I really thought we were this close to getting out of a U Sports segment without the word Guelph being said. We were this close. I was naive to think it was going to happen.
Boys, we should mention one other thing, because we talk about U Sports football a lot, but in the Canadian Junior Football League, specifically the Prairie Football Conference, the reigning Canadian Bowl champion, Saskatoon Hilltops, clinched top spot in the PFC with a 36-11 win over Regina on Saturday. There's a lot of junior football players that have made their way into the CFL. One of those that's starting and has had a great season this year, Logan Ferland with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders just wanted to shout them out. Trey Reader has been really good at quarterback for the Hilltops. So look at them as the favorite to go back-to-back in the CJFL.
It's now time for Hodges' Heritage Moment. We got a U Sports moment today, folks. On this day in 2000, Mike Plant set a new U Sports record when he recorded 284 return yards against the Regina Rams. The University of Manitoba product was a highly productive running back during his collegiate career with the Bisons, but also made history as a returner, holding the program record for longest punt return at 127 yards for 10 years until he was surpassed by Jeremy Botello in 2009. Though the U Sports record book hasn't officially been updated in a few years, it appears as though Plant no longer holds the single-game U Sports return record, as Ian St. Arnaud of Queen's University recorded 332 return yards in a 52-19 win over York just a few weeks ago. According to his LinkedIn page, Plant now works for Hilti Canada out of BC. So, JC, maybe he's one of your neighbors. I'm curious, have either of you ever heard the name Mike Plant before?
So Mike Plant is not one of my neighbors, to my knowledge. I've never encountered a Mike Plant. But Ian St. Arnaud played at Vancouver College, where I used to coach the Grade 8 football team. And while we didn't overlap, I didn't get a chance to coach him. He came to the school after I left. He did play with all of the kids that I did coach and won a provincial championship with the kids that I coached from the time they were 10 years old. So I have a personal connection to St. Arnaud, and he's having a tremendous season as a returner there for the Queen's Golden Gales.
I'll ask this politely. U Sports, please update your record book, and there could be a game that would rank high on the list. I don't know if it would be the single game return yardage record, but 2009, you guys have heard me talk about it, Jimmy Allen, Labor Day weekend for Queen's University, had an absolute day. He took three kicks or punts back for touchdowns. So that would be close, I think, to that single game return yardage record.
Yeah, I know that resources are tight at the U-Sports level, but U-Sports, if you don't care about your own records, how is anyone else supposed to care about your records? So we got to get this done. It's now time for the 3-minute drill.
This upcoming week in the Canadian Football League, there's only three games as the Argonauts, Red Blacks, and Alouettes are on bye weeks. How do you feel about just having three on the slate?
I think that having only three games stinks, especially when only one Eastern team is playing. Like nobody west of Hamilton is playing this week, and I think that's a bad thing for the CFL. If ever there was an argument for the importance of expansion, it's this. A football punted by Stefan Flintoff got stuck in the video screen at BC Play Stadium on Friday night. JC, are the Lions ever going to find a way to get that ball down?
Well, Stefan Flintoff certainly hopes so, because apparently the specialist room is going to fine him for the cost of a new football. That can run well over $100. They're going to make him pay for losing that ball. Also, they got to get that down, because if it falls in the field of play, play stops. It would erase anything that happened there, potentially erase a touchdown if it was in progress. I vote that we got to change that rule, guys. If we're going to have footballs stuck in the roof, if they drop, we just play with two balls. We go different directions. Mass pandemonium. If we're really the fastest, most exciting league in the world, like Randy Ambrosi says, certainly two balls will only make it better.
It's a good thing, fellas, that kicker ball doesn't have a chip in it, because I've heard that those footballs with the chips in them can cost over $500 for one ball.
You know what the Lions need? You remember that day in elementary school where the janitor would go on the roof and throw all the balls back? And it was like the best thing ever. That's what the Lions need. They need a janitor to go on the roof and throw all the balls
in country back. School, we just got up there ourselves when our ball went up there. I don't know what you city kids
did. Did you just grab the legs of a local chicken and they would fly you right up there? Is that how you did it?
Exactly, my man. No, you just find a way up there. You know, climb up the side of the building, throw the balls down, everybody's happy, and you get those days multiple times a year.
I love how Hodge picked a flightless bird for that analogy.
Yeah, I couldn't think of any animal, like barn animals that actually can fly. I don't think there are.
Ducks? Pigeon. I don't know. You can do ducks.
Nobody farms ducks in Southern Ontario.
Yo, we got some ducks on our little hobby farm.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Can they fly? We got the main farm, but the ducks can't fly so good.
They
but the chickens,
really
if you scare them, especially the Roosters, they'll get after you, bro. They'll fly a little bit.
Okay,
that's
there
how
you go.
Doug got so fast. It was Ricky Foley and Roosters.
That should be the name of the future biography. Ricky Foley and Roosters, the Justin Doug story.
No, I ain't doing no biography. I'm just waiting for the story of Fred DaBred.
Ah, if you know, you know.
If you know, you know. Canadian running backs Chuba Hubbard and Chase Brown combined for over 200 yards from scrimmage and three touchdowns on Sunday as the Cincinnati Bengals beat the Carolina Panthers 34-24. Is that the most impressive NFL performance you've ever seen from two Canadians in the same game?
Definitely that I've ever seen. Perhaps our colleague in the media from TSN, Dwayne Ford, has seen better in one game, and his memory is photographic, so he would probably remember it. So I think this is a reminder, you know, especially the Canadian Football League teams with Thomas the Train doing his thing, Thomas Bertrand-Hudon having that great touchdown run, that Canadians can play skill positions too and can get it done at running back. Just look at Brady Oliveira and these guys doing their thing in the NFL. The Vancouver Canucks have pushed back the start time for their November 17th game against the Nashville Predators to avoid overlapping with the Grey Cup. Fellas, you know what this means.
We can go
to the Grey Cup and then check out some hockey after the game.
It's going to be pecking away.
Yeah, JC's got to start his post-game column right after the game.
World. So if anybody out there has some free speed typing classes or you just want to help a brother out, hit him up on Twitter.
I was thinking the same thing. It is a tight turnaround, but who knows if it's a blowout in the Grey Cup? Like, those post gamers can go by pretty quick if it's a blowout. So you never know. Maybe we could hit up the Canucks. Maybe the Grey Cup will be there. Wouldn't that be epic if, you know, say the BC Lions end up shocking the world, they win it at home, and they show up 2 hours later at the Vancouver Canucks game with the Grey Cup? That would be incredible.
What's the actual time difference here, though? In start
so the game, 4 hours in between. So
there's but remember, Grey Cup is almost 4 hours long because of the.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I kind of felt like the Grey Cup would end and this game would start right after it, pretty much, or close to it.
I don't think it's that close. I think there'll probably be about, I would say, 20 to 30 minutes. But obviously, it remains to be seen. If the Grey Cup again is a blow, it could be fast. If it's a slugfest, goes to overtime, it could be longer.
So JC, if you type fast enough, I will get you a free ticket to the Vancouver Canucks game.
Maybe we just get press passes to the Canucks, and I can type in that press box.
Good idea.
I've heard stupider ideas. I really have.
Recently, too.
Yes, recently. Canadian offensive lineman and Saskatchewan Roughriders first-round pick Kyle Hergel was promoted to the active roster with the New Orleans Saints this past week and played four snaps on special teams. Do you think his role with the Saints could grow over time?
I really do. As everyone who listened to our draft coverage knows, I love Kyle Hergel as a player. I think the Saints do too. They gave him first-team reps at points during training camp and the preseason. I think they believe in this guy as somebody they can develop and potentially spot start down the line. If they continue to have injuries on the interior, he's somebody who can step up for them. Canadian QB Curtis Rourke has the Indiana Hoosiers off to a 5-0 start for the first time since, get this, 1967, after they beat Maryland 42-28 this week. Will we ever see the younger brother of Nathan Rourke, who is draft eligible this winter, in the CFL?
There's a possibility, but as long as he continues this fantastic senior season and, you know, if he can keep it going, the undefeated streak, those chances get slimmer and slimmer that he ever comes up to Canada. But let's see what he can do as they get into the heart of their Big Ten conference schedule first. Los Angeles Rams head coach Sean McVay gave Canadian tight end Nikola Kalinic props for his lead block on the Rams' fake punt in week 3. What did you make of McVay's compliment to Kalinic?
Well, I thought it was great. I mean, when you watch the play, we have it in our article on 3Down. I mean, he sticks his big old right arm up and pushes a defender away, and then at the perfect time does what McVay called a sellout block, where he lowers the arm and then dives full steam ahead into another defender. And this was a 4th and 6 that the Rams ran this on. They got 6.5 yards. Without Kalinic's block, it would have been a turnover on downs. And this was the play that sparked their comeback win over the rival 49ers. So game-saving block there for Kalinic. Hopefully he stays up on the active roster from here on out. Montreal Alouettes linebacker Darnell Sankey said he's not going to repeat his prediction from last year, which is that the team would run the table and win the Grey Cup. Is that a bad sign for the Owls?
I don't think it's a bad sign. Sankey sort of painted it as him being so confident in his team that he doesn't think they need that spark anymore like they did last year. After losing to the Argos, though, this week, perhaps he should give a little bit of a kick in the butt, because they've let a couple of ones slip here down the stretch since clinching a playoff spot. Retired linebacker and TSN analyst Enoch Mwamba is competing on CTV reality show The Traegers for a shot at $100,000. Dunk, you're a pretty boy. Would you ever do reality TV?
I've already said yes to going on The Amazing Race Canada, but both of you bozos said you wouldn't join me. I don't know why. So depending on the show, I probably would say yes.
The Bachelor?
Sure. Let's do it.
I could see Justin Duncan, The Bachelor Canada.
He would actually be the second Canadian quarterback to do it. So it makes sense.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm happy to follow in Jesse Palmer's footsteps, if that's where you're going. Canadian-American linebacker and former CFL award winner Alex Singleton suffered a torn ACL with the Denver Broncos, ending his season. But he played the rest of the game. How unbelievable is that?
Yeah, Alex Singleton suffered a torn ACL early on in this one, and then played the rest of the game, finished, I think it was 10 tackles. Like, if ever there was a player where you're not surprised to hear that happen, it's Alex Singleton. Unbelievable performance, unbelievable player. Sucks that he's going to be out, but he is in the second year of a 3-year, $18 million contract he signed. So thank goodness he's got that financial protection. He's already made his money. The rest is gravy. So hopefully he's back next year. Still, I think we'll be 32 next year. Should still have some good football left in
him. Hodge, if you snapped your ACL, I don't even think you could make it to the buffet table, let alone play the rest of an entire football game.
Yeah, the only thing I could do is still type faster than molasses. Which,
hey, I just think you might be underestimating how badly us big boys want to get to the buffet table.
Yeah, that's
think there's
true, Dunk.
Anything that could stop me,
Dunk. The only thing Dunk's interested in on the buffet table is that garnish, the green stuff, and the, like, no.
Give me that kale. Give me that spinach. Give me that romaine lettuce. Keep it coming. Avocados, cucumber. You know I love my cucumber, boys.
I like romaine lettuce. I like most vegetables. I swear to God, the people who pretend to like kale have to be pretending. It is awful.
For
delicious.
The record, Justin Dunk eats his cucumbers whole. He dips them in hummus, and he just eats them like a carrot.
I've actually switched to almond butter now, but same thing.
Almond butter?
Yeah. More protein that way.
On cucumbers?
Yeah. Try it out.
On that note, we thank you, as always, for listening to the 3-Down Nation podcast. We'll see you next week for our next episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.